Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. And Mr. Edwards, I hear we have some excitement going on today.
Well, in our beloved city, first of all, Don, you know, happy New Year and happy New Year's to the listening audience domestically and internationally, if you will. Yeah, we are in the spotlight right
yes.
now and the news commentary. 8 o'clock this morning, Central Standard Time, an explosion along the 500 block of Cedar Avenue South in Minneapolis. Right there by the big towers, actually almost across the street from the Brian Coyle Community Center. Explosion of unknown origin at this point, though some bloggers in Minneapolis are reporting that it could have been something other than a gas leak. Centerpiece, which is the gas utility here in the Twin Cities, yes. is saying that they're electronic and sophisticated scientific equipment does not detect any gas leakage in the immediate area and et cetera. So others are saying it was an electrical engagement that sparked something, maybe a propane tank or something. They seem to be doing a lot of construction in that building. Two mosques, rather controversial, if you will. Right there, one has been damaged. I'm not sure what the situation of this with the second one is, because well, the fire department is still, as we speak here in Minneapolis, is still putting water on the site, if you will.
Yes.
By the way, either 3 or 4, depending on what news media that you listen to, 3 to 4 individuals are missing. And may be presumed, and they, notice we said may be presumed to be deceased, if you will. But I don't know, Don. A lot of speculation going on. What are you hearing? What vibes are you picking up?
Well, you know, that building is 512 Cedar Avenue down to 516 Cedar Avenue on the 500 block, like you said, of Cedar Avenue. But that building years ago was a rooming house because, you know, they had the beatnik community over there, the hippies, you know, with the vegan place across the street before the Somali community actually moved in and kind of took over that area there. But that building was notorious in the 80s and 90s for a variety of things, from massage parlors to a little bit of drug activity. And it was it's a main hangout. And, I mean, I haven't been in the building in years, but my brother did have a friend who had a room there, a white guy back in the early 90s, and it was a shady place then. So I'm very curious. I mean, people are concerned about Homeland Security and wondering what's going on in this building. And we did contact CenterPoint, who has not released a statement. They do not have a press release online regarding this. And like you said, Mr. Edwards, there is no mention of a gas leak, an electrical fire, although if it is electrical, I know the fire department takes a couple of days after the fire to kind of figure that out. They look for the hot spots, of course, and we're not talking
well,
Wi-Fi.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, we are also listening closely for press releases from the MFD, Minneapolis Fire Department, if you will, and, of course, I'm extremely cognizant and very learned with respect to the fire department, as I am with the police department, having served as a federal monitor, if you will, for both of those departments over a period of 30 years in different roles. In fact, served as a monitor for the federal courts for 20 years as pertains to the fire department, as we went about the business of integrating it, making it proportionally one of the most integrated departments in the United States up until, well, probably the last year or so. The federal oversight was lifted in 1989, and, you know, we tried to hang on. But I'm just not sure, Don. I'm hearing reports are coming out of East Africa, in Nairobi, Radio Nairobi, indicating an attack on a facility in the city of Minneapolis. Now, that's kind of interesting. I know that the Kenyan security services have been expressing some real anger with the United States ever since the tragic events surrounding the shopping mall there in Nairobi a couple months ago. We all knew about that. But I'm, you know, waiting for the leaders to, you know, indicate what the lay of the land is. Some speculation that this could have been now this is, you know, really kind of dangerous, but again, Radio Nairobi and others reporting this, that it very well could have been a bomb-making facility, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's...
Yeah, bomb-making facility.
There were some of the comments that are coming up on different places in social media, Mr. Edwards, that this could possibly be a place that probably needs to be looked at a little bit closer.
Well, I know that both the FBI, Homeland Security, and the CIA, even though the CIA is not supposed to be involved in domestic investigation, but we know that's just, you know, a sham, but that all are reviewing electronic intercepts to certain individuals, if you will, as well as cell phone traffic in and around that building, not just confined to that building, other locations being identified as possible satellite operatives and operations, if you will. It appears, Mr. Allen, that Centerpoint, the gas utility, is not going to take a hit for this one. And then, of course, you know, we're talking about a big for-profit white corporation. And, you know, the word is they're not going to take a hit. They're not going to say that there was a gas leak. But, you know, maybe they can work on it. Have we heard anything from Congressman Keith Ellison, one of two members, Muslim members in the United States Congress? Is he, as he came back to the city or what?
We haven't heard anything from the congressman? I'm pretty sure him and Karen are camped out somewhere. But no, we haven't heard a word. And no, he hasn't been arrested for protesting in D.C. for Hispanic workers' rights. And there's no jobs here in the Twin Cities. But anyway, no, we haven't heard from him, to answer your question.
Okay, well, I thought that I've been listening all day and been speaking with my sources and operatives. I was expecting a press release. Maybe one of his supporters can give us a call. Oh, let's give the number out. Maybe we can get a call and find out if the congressman has issued a press release relevant to this tragedy here in on the edge of downtown Minneapolis, if you will. A massive explosion. They're now saying at least 14 have been injured, 6 critically, primarily burns. I saw some of the people being brought out down the ladders and et cetera, and, oh, boy, some of them didn't look good. I was kind of puzzled because the initial report that was a for male-only housing facility, but I saw a number of women coming down the ladders also. Is that maybe the policy changed over there? I don't know.
Well, it was New Year's Eve.
This building, 2005, has been owned by the Knorr Empire, Mr. Knorr and some of his relatives, real power brokers here in the Twin Cities, and I understand they have some properties and et cetera in Columbus, Ohio, and maybe even in Seattle. But anyways, just trying to get an update on this. It really has set the city on its ears, if you will, and now getting national coverage with the key question now, what was the cause of the explosion? And, boy, I think that's a doggone good question. What was the cause of the explosion?
That is a good question. And our call-in number, the phone lines are open. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, our numbers are 347-426-3904. Mr. Edwards, we have a caller.
All right, let's get our caller in. Happy New Year.
Caller, Happy New Year. You are live on the air. What's your name?
Am I the caller? Am I on?
Yes, you are, sir.
Oh, wow. Well, thanks a lot for having me on. You know, you guys... Man, I'm glad for this year in review, man, because this has been a heck of a ride this year. This has been a Ferris wheel where we've been over and over and over and over and around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and your question or your observation is what?
Well, a couple. One, this ranked choice voting kind of thing with Mr. Ryback, our former mayor, thank goodness he's gone, but I think he's got somebody else to do his bidding now.
Ooh. You're talking about incoming Mayor Betsy Hodges. Oh, yes. Okay.
Yes, sir. I think she's handpicked. I think this ranked choice should have been rigged choice, would have been the most honest way to say what it was, but hopefully,
you're absolutely on point, sir. Keep on. You don't get any disagreement here from these two commentators.
No, none.
Well, and how in the world, you know, the city council on the north side of Minneapolis? Not that I'm against any people of any persuasion. Okay, I am a person that believes we are all equal. We are all the same. But with all these black people that have been on the north side and have been born and raised generationally, how does an Asian get in and get the seat on the city council? I don't understand that. Do you guys have a...
Yes, we have spoke on this ever since the results of the election the first Tuesday in November. I'll just go first, and then my colleague, Mr. Allen, can certainly speak his observation. I'm Mr. Liberal, he's Mr. Conservative. But what we were confronted with were the results of... incompetent black leadership over a significant period of time. It took 20 years to dismantle what had been in play. In my newspaper columns here in Minneapolis, I pointed out that for the first time in 33 years, there is no black representation on the city council in Minneapolis, and for the first time in 27 years, there is no black representation on the city council in St. Paul. And there's a reason for that, sir, and it has a lot to do with the gamesmanship or the perceived gamesmanship of African-American leadership and et cetera. And what happened was the African-American leadership were not able to field a tough candidate, if you will, a viable candidate, a candidate who caught the attention of the African-American voting public and others. In fact, it was just a disaster, and the results showed up at the polls, and we wound up with a first-generation Asian gentleman, if you will. But the key for me, and it's in both cities, is that the door to City Hall has been closed on the African-American community. We have no standing whatsoever within the political corridors of our respective City Halls. And we're beginning to already see the results that are taking place, and a little bit later on I will point out a rather – well, I'll do it right now because we do have a caller, and the caller may want to have a question. We had a peculiar situation this morning that one of the African-American police officers who courageously went up and ladder and helped the fire department bring down some of the victims and et cetera, who is a 22-year veteran, has been knocked off of the promotional list to become a sergeant. His name is Tony Adams, decorated officer, if you will, rel-respected.
Oh, what?
But the decision was made to abort the list with he and a second African-American, who, by the way, was the head of security for the outgoing mayor, who was told by the current incoming mayor that she thought it would be better he would get back to learning how to walk the beat. And so these two African-Americans who were number three and number four on the list were negated. They were cut off. And so it was ironic for me this morning to see Officer Tony Adams, who has been decorated for valor and bravery, kind of, you know, receiving a real slap in the face by being told that he will not be promoted to sergeant, you know. Now, Mr. Allen and I have been told by some of our leaders that we're not supposed to discuss these kinds of things. Is that correct, Mr. Allen, or am I off base here?
No, you are absolutely on point, sir.
Well, gentlemen, before I go, I want to make sure I wish you guys a happy new year, a blessed new year, and to keep doing what you're doing. And hopefully people are going to get more listeners and we can get behind you and we can turn this thing around. But when I was a kid coming up in Minneapolis, we had Mr. Red Presley, Mr. Bannum, you know, Judge Poston, people like that that lived in our neighborhood, Dr. Johnson.
People that were our
leaders, Mr. Cecil Newman, Mr. Harry Davis. I mean, I went to school with their kids. I know them. Mr. Givens, all of these folks. We had people in – we had our own community, okay? You didn't want to see yours, that's fine. We got our own. But I don't feel like that anymore.
I think that that is a feeling that is well-founded and is reinforced by what is happening to the African-American community right now as we speak, sir. I'm not talking in terms of the past, as my leaders have sent word to us, that we're not to discuss the past, that we're to move on. Well, we're talking real time, and in real time, the African-American community is being stomped on in this
city. I'm just going to have one more point, because I could talk with you guys forever, but this mayor that we have had has been an abject failure, and I'll tell you a couple reasons why. All these old bike paths and all this old BS, spending money on that. These people need jobs. We need education. We need better housing. We need better opportunity. We don't need no bike paths and all that old foolishness. That don't have nothing to do with nothing. Why do we need that mess? And then how can he name a street, again, after Mr. Hassan Samatar, when you should name something after Dave Winfield? You know, we have people from here that have been born and raised in this area that should have streets named after them if you're going to do that. You know, if you're going that route, let's get real. But I'm not
sir,
saying,
you're absolutely,
you know,
you're absolutely correct. In fact, I told my colleague, Mr. Allen, I thought it was the ultimate insult for the naming of the street for Mr. Amatar. I mean, that was great. Do you know that it took 12 years to name a bridge, a walkway, for the first both woman and first African-American elected mayor in this city, Sharon Sales Belton?
I know.
It took 10 years to give us a little alleyway in North Minneapolis and a little
light.
Thank you, sir. It took 10 years for one, 12 for the other. And here's a gentleman that just kind of got here, and his death and passing is tragic, but here's a mayor that never stepped up to the plate in 12 years. After stabbing Sharon Sales Belton in the back and defeating her for mayor, they never stepped up and said, well, let us show our appreciation, which is a part of the tradition of the culture of white America,
and
name something significant. It took 12 years to name a footpath for Sharon Sales Belton, 10 years for Van White. Appreciate it, sir.
Well, I know you guys know. And so that's
okay.
You know, so I'm going to keep listening and have a good New Year, guys.
All right. Do the same,
Happy New Year.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Edwards, if I could just interject real quick. We have a condition. You know, it is hard to imagine a more stupid or more dangerous way of making decisions than by putting them in the decisions in the hands of people who pay no price for being wrong. My friend on the right, Thomas Sowell, wrote that. Okay? In the Twin Cities, the black community is in the hands of the wrong people. You know, we have a whole list. You know, it's the Notorious Seven, as I always call them, who continue to do things that don't benefit the African-American community. It's never benefited the African-American community. And I know we're going to get into this a little bit later, but I had to pull out, you know, I have the anthology of Richard Pryor, and he has this comedy skit that he did in the 70s where he was talking about the new Negroes, but he didn't say the new Negroes. He was talking about the insurgent of the Vietnamese coming to America. And and he was very deep about it, but there's something that, you know, I'm going to get into later when we get to that and talk about, you know, what's going on now here in the community and how another culture and caste of people is attempting to be pimped by our self-appointed black leaders here in the Twin Cities. It's not good. It's not good at all for anybody. I hope someone wakes up real soon and smells the coffee before they smell the napalm. But anyway, moving right ahead.
Yeah, well, let's get that phone number again. I really appreciated that first caller of the year because he's done his homework. I mean, it's quite clear. He knows. Let me say it like this. He knows his city. He knows the history of his city. But give that number again.
The number is 347-426-3904. The lines are open at 347-426-3904. And you're listening to the Ron and Don Show.
Absolutely. And again, Happy New Year. Say, keeping in line with how the African-American community is just kind of being pushed to the curb, you know, about 3 years ago, there was a move to bring in from Chicago, Illinois, a program called Operation Ceasefire. In fact, in our inaugural year, you and I talked about that. In fact, we had a couple people on the air. We actually talked to somebody in Chicago and blah, blah, blah. It fell apart for whatever reason. There wasn't continuity amongst the quote-unquote leaders. And so Operation Ceasefire never got here. And then there was a program out in the east in Boston called, like, Safe Streets, and a delegation went out there and met with the folks, but the folks weren't impressed and said, well, you know, we want to stay along the eastern seaboard. So there was then an attempt to renew under the leadership of V.J. Smith, chaplain for the Minneapolis Police Department, the national president of Mad Dads and all that. But it faltered and didn't hear anything about it. Well, I'll be doggone if about, I don't know, 5 to 6 weeks ago, a delegation of young Somalis went to Chicago along with some local African-American leaders to regenerate interest and facilitate the establishment of Operation Ceasefire here in Minneapolis under, you know, kind of different leadership, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And I just think that it's important that our leaders come out and let us know what their thinking is and when this Operation Ceasefire will be unveiled, and who the director will be, who the monitors and organizers and et cetera will be, and how much money is in play, okay? Because we know that just a couple weeks ago, Gary Cunningham, the husband of the new incoming mayor, gave $500,000 to our Summit OIC to address poverty, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just trying to get a feel on the different things that we're going to do, because there's a lot of discussion, but it's not in the public arena, about dealing with the problem of crime. You know, many of our Somali young brothers and et cetera, particularly of a certain clan, if you will, are talking and demanding that there be a better job of investigating the many homicides that are taking place within the Somali community. And so they're demanding a kind of a new structure, something that may have gone well in Mogadishu, but it's not going to go well in Minneapolis. You know what I'm saying? But Operation Ceasefire is allegedly, Mr. Allen, on its way into Minneapolis under a kind of joint leadership, whatever that's supposed to mean. Have you heard anything?
Hmm. Oh, no, I haven't heard anything, Mr. Edwards, but I just pulled out the archive because – we talked about this in several steps. It started back July 8th, July 28th, 2010,
where
we discussed that this Minneapolis Ceasefire in Minneapolis was disrespect to the stakeholders of Minneapolis. Then we, our 90-minute special on July 30th, the executive director of Ceasefire in Chicago declined a interview with us.
Yeah.
How Barb Johnson, we had an editorial piece that how Barb Johnson smelt the stench of Project Ceasefire. And then all of a sudden, you know, the 8-year-old girl in Chicago that was gunned down, jumping rope, and R.T. Ryback
yeah.
really, really wanted Ceasefire here. And then on September 9th, it was released at no federal grant for Ceasefire. So that's when it just died. But then, again, Project Ceasefire was sticky in Chicago and would have been the same in Minneapolis. It was one of the editorial pieces that we did here on Blog Talk Radio, and it talked about how Project Ceasefire put money in different organizations, or let me just break it down. There were certain facts. They went out and got, for certain factions in Chicago's gang intervention program that they have with Project Ceasefire, and they had lieutenants all over the city that were making money off this Project Ceasefire, but what they were doing was they were flipping it, buying, selling drugs, and increasing their power base, almost like a mini mob. And
yes, they were.
That same model would have been brought here to Minneapolis with not much solution for crime.
Absolutely.
And
murder. So, absolutely.
Yeah, it was really
at one point, it was being discussed that it would be. Now, first of all, Operation Ceasefire is controlled by the University of Illinois at Chicago and Northwestern University. And, of course, the real backup and facilitator is the Homeland Security. And we touched on some of that, again, as my colleague, Mr. Allen, has just pointed out. And, again, we can document what we're saying. So, you know, we always are able to go back into the archives of these programs. Is that the Homeland Security has put great emphasis, and it was one of the reasons. And if some of you young Somali brothers who made that trip to Chicago along with your American facilitators, you need to know that there was a pre-screening and a pre-review of how you would, quote-unquote, be handled and et cetera. This also ties into a program which the average person doesn't know about. It is called PERTH, under my good friend, if you will, who heads up the Police Research Institute in Washington, D.C. And there's a troubling history to this. But I was surprised when, you know, I was informed while traveling over the last couple weeks, meetings other places in the country, that we here in Minneapolis were on the stove, if you will, slated to have this program brought in here at long last as a permanent facilitation to deal with crime. Now, the Somali community, those young men who actually operate right around where the explosion took place this morning, have indicated that they should have first call on the monies that would come in. And in fact, there's going to be a meeting over at the state legislature as soon as it convenes, in which a number of Somali leaders joined by African-American leaders are going to be demanding a outlay of money to deal with and fight crime. And mm-hmm. So I assume that we'll all be briefed on. Well, I mean, we're not on a need to know basis. You know, I mean, yeah. I have to say that to you, Don, with your conservative posture, but we are not on a need to know basis. The only thing that we need to do, as I understand it, is not to criticize anything that is done, no matter how corrupt it may be.
Oh, no. Can't hold back. There's too much corruption that's been going on. You know, I mean, I just look back in the archives again here while you were over at Studio B here talking, and I mean, I'm just looking at a plethora of things that have happened by individuals in this town, African-American men in this town that have got in excess of $35 million to open up Burger King's, Dairy Queen's, and Tire Plus's, and none of these businesses are in existence right now. None of them.
And I know.
I'm just looking at this thing here. I'm looking at the grocery, the first black grocery store to open up in North Minneapolis, black-owned, black operated in 25 years, if not more, closed within 6 months because the owner didn't know how to run a grocery store, and he was off following Jackie Terry Holmes. Okay, during the Pillows
yeah.
campaign.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm just looking at all this stuff and this training stuff is getting out of hand. It's ridiculous because you're looking at, let's just talk about the stadium piece. You know, mm-hmm. again, I drive by there today. You know, it's the first, no one's working, but I drove by there Monday and Tuesday also. And I'm like, okay, let me just see one black face. I'm going to leave it alone. So I sat there for about 20 minutes. I didn't see anything that even looked like me, or Hispanic brother, or Asian brother, or even a Somali brother.
Well, let me do this so that there is absolute clarity and transparency for those that would be critical of the fact that here we are, you know, complaining. Now, there are some African-Americans that have been working for the last couple of days, ever since the final game Sunday. They were hired kind of off the street, if you will, as temporary laborers, and they have been involved in taking up the seats and any other, quote-unquote, hardware in the stadium that needs to be taken up before the roof is deflated and they begin the process of demolition and reconstruction, right? In fact, what KSTP did last night here in our city was to show a picture of three African Americans in a row. They were, you know, working on three rows coming down, and it showed three of them. They had the little orange jackets on, you know, and they were taking up the seats. But the fact of the matter is they were hired as general laborers, okay, at about $10 an hour, if not less, all right? So what is basically but while on the outside is where the money is being made, where the, at least almost now 200 to 250 Caucasian workers are beginning to tear up the ground, the surface, and smooth out the surface and prepare for the first demolition at what would be the east end of the Met Stadium. So just want to be clear so that, you know, they don't say that we're just, you know, not telling the truth, not being transparent. There were some African-Americans on Monday, Sunday, starting Sunday night, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, who are working to take up the seats, okay? But they have no guarantee of any employment after those seats are taken out of there, and all that has to be completed right around Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday on the 15th of January. Again, the phone lines are open for anyone that has any questions of us as it pertains to this particular issue. Again, Operation Ceasefire, as my colleague Mr. Allen has pointed out, as a part of our recovery mechanism, if you will, on demand. My God, Don, it was 2010 that we were talking about this. They were talking about bringing Operation Ceasefire in here. Big money, big money. They were talking, I think, initially about $2.5 million. Startup money. Didn't happen, but the way it's being worked on now, it's going to happen this time around, you know. But they've got to deal with the infighting that is going on within the Somali community. And, again, this is the reason where there's some suspicion that it was more than, you know, a mechanical problem this morning that caused that building to blow up. And at least 14 citizens to be injured. And as of this hour, because the Minneapolis Star Tribune in tomorrow morning's edition of its newspaper will report that at least 3 to 4 individuals are still missing. And the way that the building collapsed, because, you know, the third floor drops all the way into the basement, and with all that debris and et cetera, you know, no telling who may be down there pinned under that. And it's become even more difficult because you got all that ice.
Mm-hmm.
So if there are any victims under the debris, it's going to be tough to get to them.
Yeah,
I mean they'll get to them, but it's really going to be tough. But hey, that phone line is open. Any questions? Minneapolis on the world media stage as an outgrowth of an explosion along the 500 block of Cedar Avenue South, in which a Somali enterprise, including a mosque, store, restaurant, apartments, and et cetera, all destroyed in an explosion that kind of had certain features of a bomb. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what we were seeing now. Yes.
Yeah, of a bomb. You know what I mean? Not just an explosion, you know, generated by a spark, you know what I mean, when a light switch was turned on, but, you know, possibly a malfunction, you know what I mean? And, of course, the mosque on the other side of the disaster that also has been damaged, of course, has been in the spotlight for quite some time. In fact, it was in the spotlight after the attack in Nairobi, where gunmen, terrorist killed, hundreds, really, of innocent citizens, Kenyans and other citizens. The Kenyan government, as we said at the top of this program, has not been happy with the inability of the United States to take any appropriate action with regards to the recruitment efforts that continue to go on here in Minneapolis. And I know that we're not supposed to, you know, because you know, they have leaders that, you know, have close relationships and et cetera. But, I mean, the facts are the facts, you know.
Yep, I agree 100%. And
Seeing
those leaders with close relationships, or Ms. Edwards, I think that, you know, I would like to maybe try to dive into that a little bit, because I was posting some stuff on Facebook earlier today, and I asked some of my Somali friends on Facebook to tune in. Because I think it's very important that they understand that there are a group of folks out there that do not have their best interests at hand, and they are trying to basically pimp the Somali community like they've done the black community for many years. And I'm just hoping and have my fingers crossed that the Somali community is smarter than that, that they're not going to tolerate the same group of the usual suspects coming in and laying out every disparity that the black community had for the Somali community, and try to get some money off them. You know, the Somali community is doing well here.
Man, I hope you're correct. I just hope that the Kojo group, who's been in the meetings with the chief and with other security personnel, federal security personnel, I hope that the Kojo group recognizes what is happening, what's at play here, particularly with the so-called crime-fighting undertaking and et cetera, because, see, I hear from the other side also that contrary to what's being said within the Somali community, that the Somalis community is really not cooperating in the investigation of the numerous murders, assassinations that have taken place in the last couple years. Actually, it started in 2006, really, and it's been an ongoing vendetta, if you will. And I just hope that the Kojo group, I just hope they get their thinking together, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But also I would expect that the special advisory group to Chief Jhené Harto. I didn't see the chief today. Did you see any film of Chief Jhené Harto? Was she in the city this morning, today?
I did not see anything with her in it. Matter of fact, I'm looking now. Minneapolis Police Chief. No, I don't see anything.
Okay, because, the current mayor, well, he's not the mayor anymore. That's right. Technically, he's all through as of last night. But the past mayor, well, he technically is in until the swearing-in takes place in a couple of days for the mayor, and then, the 6th of January for the new council. But, obviously the fire chief was there, the deputy fire chief, the assistant chief Penn, one of the most outstanding African-American firefighters in the United States. Actually, she really should have got a shot at being the chief after Chief Alex Jackson decided he had enough of what goes on around here. But anyways, I kept looking for Chief Jhené Harto, for my police chief, to step up and talk in terms of, the investigation. Because, investigation has been a big topic around here for those, though I was out of the city and et cetera. I understand there are a number of editorials by the head of the Police Federation raising some serious questions about timing, communication, such things as that. And this is a rather tense time, Mr. Allen, as it pertains to the transition that we would expect involving the Hodges administration, if you will. It's kind of tense out here right now, But, we, as black folk, we don't have much say because we don't have anybody in City Hall.
No, nobody. I'm looking at here where the explosion in Minneapolis building leaves 14 injured, Wall Street Journal, CNN, Fox News, of course, and KFTP, which is ABC. Yeah, it's all over the place right now.
Well, as I said before, Radio Nairobi, the Kenyan intelligence service indicating that something has happened in Minneapolis, which is possibly a response to terrorist activities that have been coordinated out of Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, this is Radio Nairobi, if you will, Al-Shabaab being identified as a possible source and a possible target. As it pertains to what happened this morning. And I repeat that again. Elements of Al-Shabaab being a target as it pertains to a domestic response to Al-Shabaab's activities, conduct, and et cetera, particularly in the carnage that took place at the mall in Nairobi, Kenya, almost a couple of months ago. And so I know folks have to should be a little cautious, because boy, the last thing you want to have in your town is beginning to see a series of bombings. Ask the Russians over in Volgograd right now.
Yes.
They're nervous about the Olympics over there. And, you know, the last thing in the world you want, bombs going off in the railroad station and buses and et cetera. You know, you really don't want this kind of activity as it pertains to the tranquility, you understand, and expectation of quality of life, right? You know, being able to be comfortable
and
go to the movies and, you know, watch movies and eat popcorn. I mean, boy, you know, some device goes off. Whew. So I'm just saying that certain elements in Africa, as an example, because it was rather interesting that Radio Nairobi got on top of this situation within a couple hours after the explosion along the 500 block of Cedar Avenue South in on the edge of downtown Minneapolis. So. But those phone lines are open. Maybe, you know, I was assuming maybe some of your Somali friends would have some questions or share with us their thoughts about what happened this morning at that facility.
Yeah, and that number again is 347-426-3904. The lines are open at 347-426-3904. You know, Ms. Evans, I was looking back over to 2013, and I think that, you know, the African American community in Minnesota has been hit hard by a couple of major news items that we basically broke or added to when they broke and only told half the story. But one of the first big ones, and I'm going by, I'm looking on the Independent Business News Network, my news network now, and a story that received 500 and it was read 561 times. No Black History Museum for Minnesota. Excuse me, ma'am. What's the problem? M-A-A-M.
Mm-hmm.
And so I actually, from something that you wrote a while back, and this is just very interesting because I had to read this again because I was in shock. And I was like stunned and just, you know, totally appalled about this. The museum took in $1.2 million loan from Franklin National Bank, $1 million from the state of Minnesota, $1.5 million in bonds from the city of Minneapolis, $500,000 from five Minnesota corporations, and $300,000 from other sources. The dilemma was the museum failed to meet the conditions of the state of Minnesota for granting its money, that Franklin National Bank would be the first in have first position in a default, or otherwise taxpayers of Hennepin County and Minnesota would have to pay. To continue,
right,
the museum has put up a new collateral which it claims it doesn't have. And so, I mean, you're talking about almost $5 million there. We can't get an African-American museum open? Oh,
well, Don, that's what happened. And as you pointed out, and, of course, on my own website, the MinneapolisStory.com, I talked about this as far back again as 2010, 2011, that it was an uneasy feeling. And, you know, I talk in terms of one of the most feared persons in this city right now behind some of that and some other things as it pertains to big loans that were made from Franklin National Bank here is the beloved and respected Dorothy Bridges, who is the senior vice president for the Federal Reserve District of Minnesota. A lot of the folks didn't know that in July of 2012, after being gone for about a year and a half, that Dorothy Bridges very quietly returned here. And she has been a dervish, if you will, with respect to cutting off a lot of action and reminding a whole group of folks about the fact that they still owe a lot of money, you know, starting with that whole crew over there at the former City Inc., that $600,000 that never was paid back, that disappeared, et cetera. And then, you know, what you've just talked about, over $3 million for the African-American Minnesota Historical Museum, which never got off the ground, won't get off the ground. And, you know, that was so crucial to putting information out that our people would be, well, better prepared to state their position, defend their positions, better able, if you will, to talk historically. But I'm hearing, and just, you know, upon my return a couple days ago to our beloved Shangri-La, I mean, I'm hearing this new philosophy and policy that we're not to talk about this. You know, we're just to kind of go on singing like the song of the South, zippity-doo-dah, zippity-day, you know what I mean, having a happy day. Burr Rabbit, that's where Burr Rabbit emanated from. So, I don't know quite what to say, Don, because we're being told that, you know, that is kind of the operative word right now, and we need not, should not talk about anything, be it the Viking Stadium or the nonprofit agencies or et cetera. People talking in terms of the need to take control of the NAACP, put pressure on the Reverend Jerry McAfee, and et cetera. And I'm like, well, you know, the NAACP has not been a threat for almost a decade. So, you know, you get some activists there and on the board, and all of a sudden folks are saying, well, we need to be able to speak for the NAACP. And I'm you know, I'm just not comfortable in understanding why all of a sudden folks don't want the NAACP. Because I got to tell you, on my television program to air this coming Sunday, I call upon you folks in the NAACP to ask State Senator Bobby Joe Champion, co-chair of the powerful Stadium Oversight Commission, to come together and have a joint public hearing in about two and a half weeks. Take a look at the statistical data and take a look at the plan that Alex Tittle, you remember Alex Tittle, right?
Oh, yeah.
You remember Alex? Alex was, you know, a guy that we thought was going to make a difference. We were even talking about, you know, having Alex join us on the air. I guess he's not been responsive for whatever reason. But my recommendation as a longtime observer and activist is that there should be a joint public hearing, at least a two-hour hearing, testimony taken from Ted Mondale, the executive director of the Sports Facility Authority, Michelle Kelm Haglin, the chairwoman of the powerful five-member commission. We also need to hear from commission member Barbara Williams. You know, we haven't heard anything from Barbara. She's been sitting there holding the black seat, if you will, appointed by Mayor R.T. Ryback to one of the five seats. And so, you know, I'm just proposing and like to get some feedback if there's anybody that's bold enough to dial the phone. But I'd like to see a joint hearing in which the plan is laid out. See, Don, there's no plan for the employment of African Americans and others on the stadium, contrary to what everybody's been saying. There's really no plan. See, if there had been a plan, there would be 45 to 50 to 60 African-Americans working right now outside, and another 20 or 30 or 40 working inside taking up those seats, if there was a plan, if there was an equity plan, Don, right? Would you agree?
Yeah, exactly. I would agree 100% with that. Yeah, but see, the thing is, Mr. Edwards, we have a state senator, Senator Bobby Joe Champion, that has no idea when the work started on the stadium. He was on a local radio station here and says, well, when the work starts on the stadium, or the work has not started on the stadium as
that
yet.
That was very embarrassing for me.
Yeah.
Particularly when he was at the champagne ceremony when they turned the dirt over. And, I mean, you could look from the platform and as they went into the beautiful tent where food and everything was being served, you could look just off to your right and your left. And you could see all these white workers out there. At that time, there was 157 white workers working. And in fact, I heard another activist indicate that the numbers, that false numbers are being given out. And I'd like for them to challenge us on how those numbers are false, because they turned around and went and talked to Alex Tittle about the number of individuals that are supposedly going to be working on this project. Do you know that Alex Tittle and the Sports Facility Authority have advanced the number of 2,500 people of color working on this stadium?
Oh, they have?
And that has already officially started, technically, if you will, though there's no monitoring, if you will. The Civil Rights Department has not been selected to be the monitoring. The State Human Rights Department has not been selected. Kevin Lindsay, your good friend, if you will, the Commissioner of Great Blackness, if you will,
yeah,
has not set down a manifesto, if you will. And so, again, I want to repeat on this program, on the 15th of January or thereabouts, the legislation requires that the second annual report of the Sports Facility Authority be made to State Senator Champion and his co-chair, a Republican female from the House side. And I would encourage folks other than just leadership to go over there to the state capitol and be present when and get copies of that report.
Yes.
It has to be made on the 15th day of January, which ironically is the occasion of the celebration of the life of Martin Luther King Jr., right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I just want to fast back to, you know, our friends, and be they supporters or critics out there, that a report must be made with respect to the current state of all aspects of the People's Stadium, including employment and including the equity plan. And so we should be able to see some specific live numbers. You have at least 200 to 300 workers right now on the site, even in this sub-zero weather. 200 to 300 workers out there right now. Average salary around $60 an hour. $60 an hour right now.
Wow, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
If you can find it, I am just looking here because you know, on February 1st, 2013. Let me get his name right here. Jim Noble refused our complaint against the veterans' preference goals on a new Viking stadium.
And that's based on the video that you sent viral on YouTube.
Yes.
On the week of the 18th of January 2013, after we were told by Velma Carvel and Wanda Kilpatrick, the compliance officer for the Met Council, that there would be no commitment made to American veterans to find employment on that site. She was later reprimanded by former Councilmember Gary Schiff after lying to him and after being confronted with the video. But Mr. Allen and I did go to the state legislative auditor, powerful, powerful physician in this state, asking for his office to accept a formal complaint by us, and he rejected it.
Mm-hmm.
And what was that date again that he turned us down, Mr. Allen?
It was February, I got it right here, February 1st.
Yeah, that would have been approximately 13 days after we had asked the question in a meeting in the Halsey Hall room at the Met Stadium with regards to both veterans, preference, veterans' access, as well as the goals for the employment of people of color. And we were told in that meeting around the 18th of January 2013 that was an inappropriate and premature question.
Exactly.
By the lawyer representing the Sports Facility Authority, who represented the law firm of Dorsey and Whitney. I mean, you know, hey, we're just talking facts, documentation. I don't know why folks are saying that we need to be silenced.
Yeah, but
I'd sure like to see that joint hearing amongst your NAACP leadership and you're a member of the exec committee. Is that correct, Mr. Allen? I mean, we want that. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Correct.
And I'd certainly like to see that. I think that the community, all communities, deserve the opportunity to hear what the success story is going to be like, not what it's going to look like anymore. What it's going to be like, you know. And we got numbers right now. There are numbers right now that can indicate if Commissioner Kevin Lindsay's two-thirds goal is operational right now and functional. I maintain
exactly.
It isn't. But, hey, prove me wrong. Prove me wrong, you know.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
I mean,
that'd be nice.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'd love to be proved wrong and be shown African-Americans and others of color out there working right now on the site on the edge of downtown Minneapolis, just about two blocks from the explosion that took place this morning on the 500 block of Cedar Avenue South. You know what I'm saying? I mean, these are things that can be correlated. But what's that phone number again, Don? We want to throw that number out there. Are you getting any text message?
Yeah, we got a chat room full of people. We have a caller.
Okay, let's get the caller. Yeah.
Just stand by. Caller, you are live on the air. Go ahead.
You know,
caller,
I hate to call back. Hello, am I on?
You can call as much as you want.
Yeah, you're on.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, I hate to call back, but I just wanted to have, I just had one more point as I was listening to you guys. You're so entertaining. And that is about the whole, and I want to congratulate you, Don, on the, you know, NAACP and you're being voted in. Hopefully this is going to really make a good change. But as I look at that organization, not just Minneapolis, but nationally, this whole thing of using the word Negro, I don't know. I don't know. It seems like somehow we need to be moving ahead. I don't know that the kids, I don't know that the young people resonate with that word. You know? I don't know that has a timely feel for today's world. It just seems like there's something that needs to move our thing.
If I could, my brother, let me do this, because I was a delegate to the NAACP's national conventions back in the 70s. And as a young black man back in those days, I had those same kinds of discussions going back to the 1950s. We actually discussed this on the floor of the delegate assembly of the NAACP. This would have been 1972, 73, 74, 75 to 76. One of the problems, first of all, you have the whole thing of the millennium and generations and et cetera. And you have people who maintain there are more important issues out there than the name of the organization. But the other problem that you have legally is that in order to extricate that name, you would have to change the articles of incorporation of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. And so the word Negro is not used. It's the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People.
Colored people. Well, that's, you know, the same thing.
Yeah, well, but see, there are folks that would disagree with you because initially they wanted to call it the Niagara Movement, which is what it was originally when the NAACP was founded. It originally was founded as the Niagara Movement.
Right, with
but
the
what
boys,
happened,
yeah.
White folks started taking advantage of the word Niagara, and Niagara started becoming N-I-G, okay? But I understand what you're saying, but the fact of the matter is you would probably have to carry out more energy to change the name than you would carry out energy to change the scene, if you will. But it's something that's not going to happen until a whole new, different – and I got to tell you, back in the 70s, we thought we were the generation – that would change the name National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. Didn't happen, okay?
Well, I know. I mean, I was back there in the 70s.
Okay.
I know. And the thing is, you know, as we talk about this race thing and what have you, see, from my standpoint, we're going to always have a beef with these white folks, okay?
Absolutely.
I mean, come on now. How could you be so cruel? You know, I have a wonderful father, wonderful mother, all my folks out in Alabama, Chicago that I know. But if I came back in the 1800s, I'd never know them. I would have been taken away from them.
All right.
So my point is, how could you be that cruel? How could you be that cruel? But, so my point is that, yeah, we have a beef. And that's always there, but I don't know how many meetings I've been to where, you know, like the county, state comes in with money, and everybody jumps up, the black folks. You didn't do this. I got to wait in line. You got to do this. You've treated our people, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, that's going to always be there. But we have to put that aside because we have our own families. We have our own kids. We have our own life. We live today. We got to make today good. We can't do nothing about what already happened.
Absolutely. Mr. Allen, do you have any observation?
Well, you know, the NAACP, you know, Ms. Edwards, I read a lot of books and have been. Well, you know, I'm in graduate school. But the thing is, in 1909, when a group of, you know, black and white citizens, including Du Bois, Moskowitz, Henry Moskowitz, Overton, Oswald, what's his name, Garrison Villard, William Inglis Wallum, and they had the call for political and civil liberty. And it was a network of more than 2,200 branches covering all 50 states, including Japan, including in Japan and Germany. And
well,
so,
well, see, Don, right there, you said a key word, network.
Mm-hmm.
Well, network.
Yeah, and I agree with that. See, here goes the problem. I don't mind being a person of literature and English. I don't mind Negro. Because one of the problems is, maybe not with us, but our younger generation, they haven't picked up a book. They haven't read any Baldwin. They haven't read any W.E.B. Du Bois. They haven't read anything, the speech at the convention by Booker T. Washington. You know, they don't understand a lot of the roadmaps that were laid out for us, you know, after 1860 and into the 20th century, in the 1920s, I should say, the Harlem Renaissance area, the poets, the short story novelists, the writers, and, you know, they couldn't do what we can do now. But what they did is they laid out a roadmap in their literature of what if they could do. Now, Du Bois talked about the two-ness, and this is something, caller, you brought up before, and Mr. Edwards. The two-ness is that we of African-Americans and people of color in general suffer from this the minute we walk out our front doors. We have to worry about what this other person, this other cast of people is going to think of us, when that other cast of people don't have to worry about what we're going to think of them. Automatically put in the priority seat. So in turning that all around, what happens is you get a bunch of us together, okay? You will have people in the room that have been marginalized by poverty pimps here locally. You will get a group of people in the room that could write a proposal better than anyone sitting at the table who are still marginalized. You will get a group of people that will get all the money. I mean, I'm dealing so with some, and this is like part, I'm going to bring this into the conversation because I don't care. I care, but I don't care about this particular group. I'm dealing with the Minnesota Department of Health, who at one time I met with five Caucasian women. They want to reach poor black people who are on Medicaid general assistance to become part of a research program or survey program for diabetes.
Research, that's really what it is, research.
and so I'm sitting in the room. I'm saying, well, are you giving away $25 Cub gift cards? Oh, no, we can't do that. I said, are you giving away bus tokens, Visa cash cards? Now, mind you, these are people unemployed on general assistance, Medicaid, living in Minneapolis, African-American. Okay? Social media is not going to work. Okay? Insight News, spokesman recorder, KMLJ is not going to work. Now, KMLJ will work if they're serving liquor, but in this case, for research, it's not going to work. And so I'm sitting in the room and I'm looking at these white ladies. I'm going like, well, damn, ain't no black women up here, black men that can tell you this? You know, I mean, really? And this is the problem that we have, because they've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars in North Minneapolis with the usual suspects that haven't done a damn thing all year in this case. Okay, that had the money to go buy $525 gift cards, $25 gas cards, and they still could have went out and brought that Mercedes Benz or Porsche 911 with the money left over that they had.
But see, Don, you know, you hit on so many great points, but the one, you know, when you go back to the Du Bois and Booker T and all them guys didn't agree with each other, okay? They didn't agree on how it should be done, but they agreed that it had to be done. And that's what we got to do.
Yeah, I mean, I agree 100%.
It doesn't matter how it's done. It doesn't matter. But progress is progress. It's not, your way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but, you know, what we need to remember as black men, that was called the doctrine of we agree to disagree, we disagree to agree.
There you go. There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you
All
go.
Right. All right, appreciate it, my brother.
All right.
Yeah, talk to you.
All right, take care. All right. Don wanted to take an opportunity here. We have another half hour. I just think it's important because the discussion we just had with the caller, and, hey, I appreciate him calling back because it was important enough to him to redial the phone. But I want to say the very best to Leslie Frazier. And I think it's regrettable what happened to him, though I think for those of us who are in the sports arena, that it was expected. In fact, I said on this program with you last year when he was not given a contract extension that he was being set up for failure. He was being set up to be disrespected and marginalized, and we used that word a couple times tonight, marginalized by his players. His players didn't buy into it. They played hard and fought hard. But what the organization did was give him an instrument of failure, and that was quarterback Christian Ponder, okay? In fact, probably if they would have went with Matt Cassel, they probably could have won three more games, very well could have finished in a tie. If not, in fact, won the NFC North, they very well could have surpassed both Chicago and Green Bay and Detroit. But Leslie Frazier, and we say this in our column for publication in the Minnesota Sportsman Recorder this next week, Leslie Frazier was a man of great principle, great integrity, great honesty, if you will, a man liked and respected by his players, and you can't ask for any more than that. Also,
we have
well
a call
respected too. Around the league. All right. But I just want to, and I'll continue after this caller, but I just wanted to say that, that we have seen a great human being who really was wronged as it pertains to his quote-unquote leadership of the Minnesota Vikings. Caller, go ahead. What do we got, Don?
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hello there. Ron, are you on the air there?
Yep.
Yeah, we're both
okay.
on the air.
Yes, sir. Say, you know, first of all, you guys are doing a tremendous job. I'm very grateful for this little program, and I'm grateful for your program, Ron, that comes on. I'm an avid. I follow your program, Ron. I watch it every single week. I never miss it.
I appreciate it. Okay.
And the other thing I want to point out is I just want to basically follow up some of the things that you've been pointing out. That I'm a concerned citizen. That's the reason why I'm calling. I'm very concerned. I'm concerned about an article written in the Sunday paper about a week ago about how the mayor has made the city of Minneapolis whole. I mean, I can't see. I mean, you know, I just cannot see how you can. There's just a number of things, you know, I'm concerned about. You know, the people need to get to work every day. You know, we need Portland and Park Avenue to get to work every day. That was a good. Two of the best streets in America, one going north, which would be Park Avenue. You could, a person could go north and go to work, or a person, if they work south, they could go Portland and get to work without having to ride the freeway, especially during the wintertime. And none of this was considered. This decision, just like the others that this administration has done, they just do what they want to do. The citizens are not consulted. The citizens are not considered. They just do whatever they want to do. They go over the city charter and build a stadium. Ron, you've done a wonderful job. I wonder if you could do that again. Point out what is per year for 30 years, what is the amount of money this is going to cost the city of Minneapolis, this stadium?
Appreciate that question, and let me indicate the Pacific documents that were researched, and not by us colored people, because, you know, we know how that game plays. What happened was almost 2 years ago, Gary Schiff, the then councilman, Democrat, 9th Ward, became concerned with regards to statements being made by Mayor R.T. Ryback, the now outgoing mayor. And he, Councilman Schiff, did the doggonest thing. He, and in fact, this individual is one of the individuals that helped initiate the lawsuit. Gary Schiff went out and retained the services of a man by the name of Kaplan. And he was a former councilman way back in the day when the 1970s in the old 8th Ward. And Kaplan did an extensive year-long study, And what he came up with was what it would really cost for the city of Minneapolis to support this billion-dollar stadium that's being built, and because you got to pay for it. And the figure, sir, that he came up with was approximately $683 million over 30 years that the taxpayers of the city of Minneapolis are obligated to pay. That's why some of those who were passionately outraged with regards to and actually, R.T. Ryback put his political career on the line, and as far as I'm concerned, got what he had coming, and that was that political career was shattered. That's why he didn't run for a fourth term. But the figure is $683 million over a 30-year period that will have to be absorbed by the city of Minneapolis, and that means a lot of projects, a lot of social projects, and et cetera, that will not get funded because those obligations will become mature each and every year, some every five years, but in 30 years, they will have to have paid out that amount of money. And so when I was not in the city, but I recovered, retrieved a copy of that article and laughed to myself, that statement by the Star Tribune on its editorial page about how great this man had been. And I just, you know, I understood, but at the same time, I just thought that it was outrageous and scandalous that the Johannesburg Times, Minneapolis Star Tribune, would write that kind of article and dedicate some kind of semblance of greatness to this man. R.T. Ryback has basically just killed this town. Okay,
yes.
He has ripped
yes,
the guts out of it, and
yes,
he has
sir.
Certainly done nothing for the African-American community other than make our lives a little bit worse.
Absolutely.
But I hope that helps you with the description. It was Kaplan who put together the study. He did a heck of a job. In fact, it was a document that was used a couple weeks ago when former Republican City Council President of many, many years ago, Dan Cohen, and the lady who is the chairwoman of the tax committee, when they sued, they went into court to sue. Now, my understanding is that they have they are in the process of appealing the ruling by the court. But again, to your question and observation about R.T. Ryback, man, this man was an absolute disaster. Everything that Sharon Sells Belton did in her two terms, this cat made sure that he dismantled. But see, it goes to, and I used to talk about it quite a bit on my radio program and on the television program. It was a statement that he made was very interesting. When he first got elected, within a couple weeks of being elected 12 years ago, he said one of the missions that he had set out to accomplish was to change the face of black leadership in Minneapolis. And in many respects, he kind of did that. But what he did is that he changed the opportunity for success for the African-American community in this town.
Well,
and
as if you don't experience that.
Big part?
No, as if we're not already experiencing that.
Yes, yes. See, he put into place the master plan to strip us of any representation at City Hall. And that's why I've been hammering this particular observation since the first Tuesday in November of last year, is that this guy worked in a very clever manner along with the rest of the Democratic Party, okay, the plantation masters, and when they got through with what they needed to do in the election of 2013, they stripped the African-American community of meaningful representation. Yeah, we have two black state senators, but they have to work within the confines of home charter rule and such things as that, and they are not there on a daily basis to help manage and protect the African-American community. Now, people can talk terms that Don Samuels didn't do that, and we know and understand that. But the fact of the matter is, you could at least go in and force Don Samuels as a black council member to do some things. You can't do anything. At the top of this program, and it was no accident that we did that, I talked in terms of how the police department, under the encouragement of R.T. Ryback, cut off the sergeant's list so that two veteran and well-respected African-American officers, one who was his chief of security, R.T. Ryback's chief of security, that they would be denied the opportunity because, see, the list will be killed on January 13th. And the process then will become by what is called administrative appointment. And so these two African-Americans, Tony Adams, who was one of those out there rescuing people this morning, if you will, and another black officer, were told that they would not be allowed to vie or to succeed to the position of a sergeant in the Manhattan Police Department. One has 22 years. The other one has 19 years. No one is in a position to say anything, okay? You need to know, Don, that Bong and the Mexican and our Somali brother were made aware of this by the Police Federation and said they didn't have the time right now to deal with that.
Oh,
that's
no.
Something you can take up later on. The fact of the matter is once the list is killed on the 13th of January, there will be no African Americans in a position to be promoted to sergeant or lieutenant in the Manhattan Police Department. The list is dead, gone.
Oh man! Well, once again, Ron, I just am so grateful, you know, for this little program, and I'm just determined to continue to go forward, and you know, just keep up the good work. I mean, cause
all right,
you,
thank you, sir.
You,
appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you so
all
much.
Right, thank you. All right, thank you. Yeah, Mr. Allen, get the line phone. You know, getting the lines open for the next 15, 14 minutes because, you know, a lot of information coming forward.
Yeah, our number is 347-426-3904. Again, our number is 347-426-3904. We want to let everybody know that next week, January 8th, we will have Teachers Federation Union President, Executive Director, Lynn Norgren, live with us here on the Ron and Don Show.
Now, she's not just, she is president of the Teachers Federation of Minneapolis. She is the elected head of the Teachers Federation, a woman who was, every attempt was made to sabotage her, if you will. Don, why don't you go back in? I've got to switch up phones here in Studio B.
Okay, no problem, no problem.
Why don't you talk a little bit about her history?
Yes, and Lynn Norgren is, you know, the meetings were, the negotiations between the unions and the district here were shut down, made private by Lynn and her organization, and the Republican Party of Minnesota joined hands with the African American Leadership Forum to put out a statement saying that they were against it. Well, there's been a lot of lies told in regards to this, and what we're going to do next Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. is start off live with Lynn Norgren, and it will explain in detail what went down, what happened, and who's lying and who's telling the truth. But as always on this show, we always ask our listeners to make up your own minds. You know, we know there's a lot of sheeples out there, that people that want to follow the crowd and do things in the group activity, and there's no singular thinkers. And we, in 2014, Mr. Edwards and I, we would like to create some individuals that think for themselves here in the Twin Cities. That's how we're going to get things done. News-wise, you know, we need people to actually read the news, not just our news, but all the news, and decide, you know, what's really going on, and ask the serious questions. So that's next week. We'll have Ms. Norgren on, and we look forward to having you back. Go ahead, Mr. Edwards.
No, I think it's great that we have been able to encourage and have actually developed the trust with the union president that she would graciously agree to come on this program and answer many, many questions about the whole issue of education. And this is critical what Mr. Allen facilitated for this program, because, you know, just because the Star Tribune and anybody else is not writing about the fact that we're involved right now in this city in very sensitive and intense negotiations, contract negotiations, which could determine, you know, kind of the future of education, certainly the future of education for African Americans, but also a situation that could lead to a shutdown. And what I was saying before I had to break away was that we were not necessarily surprised, if you will. We were just kind of disappointed, if you will, that black leadership, particularly the so-called Black Political Alliance, under Gary Cunningham and others, actually initiated about 3 months ago a very vicious attack upon Lynn Norgren because they got their orders as it pertains to initiating that kind of attack and undermining her. Yet, Don, as you remember, when she responded by revealing publicly the 10 particular recommendations that had been made as it pertained to the whole issue of quality education and et cetera, everybody got quiet. And in fact, some of our leadership pretended that they didn't know anything about these particular 10 negotiated or negotiable items, if you will, that are part of the negotiations that are going on. And my understanding is Lynn Norgren will speak with great depth to these negotiating items on this program next week. Is that correct? Just want so you
that is
get
correct.
On.
That is
okay.
Correct.
All right. Yeah. I just think that it needs to be exposed. I did in my column in the Spokesman Recorder, the oldest African-American newspaper here in the state of Minnesota, I did speak out on her behalf and indicated that I was saddened by the attacks upon the Teachers Federation coming from black organizations that speak in terms that they are, in fact, holier than thou, if you will. But also some feedback that Mr. Allen and I have been getting over the last 10, 15 days is that there is a serious discussion among some of you colored leaders about the fact that, and you've been telling your white handlers this, by the way, that you will be the only entity that will be allowed to speak on issues and propositions as it pertains to the African-American community. Some of y'all have been out there telling your handlers that, if you will. You've been telling it to the Minneapolis Foundation, Northwest Area Foundation. Well, you're part of the Northwest Area Foundation, General Mills and others. And you've been telling that to the incoming mayor, Betsy Hodges. You've been telling her and guaranteeing her that that you will most definitely shut down any criticism of her administration, and that's really what that $500,000, Mr. Allen, was all about.
Mm-hmm.
That's called hush and control money.
I need more than that.
Yeah, called hush and control money. And I think it's sad, if you will, that this kind of effort is being mounted to silence. That's why I'm just so passionate about the fact that I just hope that the NAACP can get traction and take on and take back its leadership role in this city. It I got to tell you, Brother Allen, as a man who's the second vice president, it's desperately needed. This may be the last go around for us in many respects.
Yes,
as African Americans.
I agree 100%.
Yeah. This may be the last go-around, if you will. We're down, what, Don, to the last, last 6-7 minutes? Anything that we may have passed over or any calls?
No call we passed over. I think we covered a whole lot of stuff, and, you know, things start up in regular mode next week on Monday for people going back to work. I'll get off these long vacations and this dreary time, the kids out of daycare and things like that. And, you know, we'd like to, again, wish everybody a happy new year. But
let me say this. We've got 5 minutes left. The latest intel that's coming out of City Hall is that Michael Brown is being looked at as the successor to Velma Corvell. Michael Kip Brown. possibly will be appointed as the new civil rights director, supplanting Velma Corvell, who's basically been told that her services will no longer be needed. That's something you want to kind of keep your eye on. Oh, by the way, heck of a firing at the civil rights department, as I'm being told now by city council sources. A young African-American who made the mistake of raising some questions about the conduct of the department and cover-up. Young man who actually had been recommended by Mayor R.T. Ryback, fired yesterday morning. Fired. Young African-American, full of enthusiasm, hard-working young man. Yeah. fired, walked out of his office by Tony Newborn. You remember Tony, don't you?
Oh, yeah, I remember little Tony. Yeah, I know Tony Newborn.
Yeah, Tony, the head of investigations for the Civil Rights Department, brother came into the office. She met him at the door. They had security standing by, told him that he was to clean out his office, walked him out the door. Now, that's like the fifth firing of African-Americans in that department in the last couple years. So I have to say they have fired, and the reference is City Pages, they have fired a couple of white females, and in fact, one of them is suing. But anyways, Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, which is expected to, quote-unquote, look after our rights and protect us, right? In chaos, in absolute chaos. So, any calls? One more time, Don. Run that number out there one more time in case there's anybody who wants to punch those keys.
With 3 minutes left, our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio, the first show of the new year on January 1st, 2014.
Excuse me, 2014, that's right.
Yeah, I was looking at something over here that said, I was looking at some dates on some stuff that we wrote a while back. Actually, you wrote a while back. I was looking at that, I was like, wow, that was a long time ago. But anyway, Mr. Edwards.
All right, Mr. Allen, you know, what more can we do? I look forward to our interview with the president of the Powerful Teachers Federation next Wednesday night. Coming from our studios here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, if you will, from the Apple Palace.
All right. All right.
Well, take us home, Don. Give us a little James Brown.
That's way too slow for me right now.
All right, James Brown, bring it home.